You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday to you. Arkansas and Oklahoma State game day just a day away. We'll talk today about the Razorbacks and the Cowboys with Taylor McGregor, who's going to be on the sideline for the game on ABC tomorrow. We'll also talk with Ben Portnoy about the House versus NCAA settlement and what went down Thursday and why that settlement might be in danger now. Ethan Westerman will also be on desk with me as we look forward to Arkansas and Oklahoma State. But first, as I mentioned, we'll have Taylor McGregor. Taylor, it's always great to talk to you. For those who do not know, Taylor is a University of Arkansas graduate, and you're a pro, Taylor, but is there something extra when you get to call a Razorback game?
It's special for sure. I think the thing for me is just the amount of reflection I get to do leading up to a game. You know, I was on my phone today looking at old photos of when I was a junior and senior in college running cable for ESPN and with a dream of wanting to be a reporter one day. And so sometimes I just have these pinch me moments, and especially when I cover an Arkansas game, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I actually got to this point. And I'm just so thankful for my time at the University of Arkansas because it afforded me so many amazing opportunities to get involved, to meet people, and to learn and grow while I was still a student. So it's certainly special for sure just to reflect on the journey.
Taylor will be in Stillwater with Dave Pasch, play-by-play, and Dusty Dvorak, the analyst. Taylor, I feel like you've been somewhat of a good luck charm to Sam Pittman. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think they're undefeated when you've been on the sideline.
You know, they're 2-0 and two overtime games.
That's right.
So I don't know if Pittman considers me luck because I was around for the Liberty Bowl when Kansas made that dramatic comeback, and it almost did not go in the Hogs' favor. But listen, I always say, like, in my role, we're neutral, but I cheer for good games. And so if my luck is overtime games, I'm all for it.
And of course, you were there for Florida last year, Arkansas's only SEC win. So as we record this interview, it's Friday morning. I know that you typically will talk to the coaches the day before the game. Have you had those conversations yet?
Those are coming up tonight, so Friday night. But we've talked to several of the players, so gotten a little bit of insight. I'm excited to talk to Coach Pittman and, of course, Petrino, and then Travis Williams as well. What he did with the defense last year, the leap they took was incredible, and he's one of my favorite guys in this sport to talk to, just the energy that he brings. So that'll be tonight, and I'm really looking forward to it.
What kind of sense have you gotten from the players about this game?
I think the players are in such a good mindset of this is an entirely new team. And I've been asked a lot about maybe some of the pessimism that comes with being a Razorback fan. And when you talk to the players, they're like, there are 55 new guys on this squad. We're completely different than we were a year ago. And I think they really believe they have the skill set to go out and beat anybody. And certainly when you're coming off a 70-0 victory, your confidence should be high. So they want to go out and prove that that was not a fluke, that was not just the opponent, that they can really have success against good football teams. And Oklahoma State is just that. They're a really good team. You know, a lot of people think that they have a chance to potentially win the Big 12, sneaking into the college football playoffs. So this is a big test for them early coming to Stillwater. Look, Boone Pickens Stadium is a tough place to play. The fans are right on top of you. It's going to be really loud, and it certainly is going to be a test. But as I mentioned, I think the players are excited for that test.
What about for a sideline reporter? Because you're typically about 10 feet away from the stands, and everything is packed in there real tight.
Yeah, look, I love coming to Stillwater. I love Oklahoma State fans and the way they've received us. But it's really hard to work at Boone Pickens Stadium just because it's so tight down there. And, you're kind of crammed in there. But we'll make it work, and I'll still try to do the job to the best of my ability. But, yeah, it is certainly one of those stadiums that is really, really challenging to work in.
What's a game weekend look like for you and your production crew?
So we get our assignments on the Sunday before the upcoming Saturday, so 6 days before. And usually Sunday, I start doing research, reaching out to the SIDs and saying, hey, I'm on your game this week. When do you have a chance to chat? Mm-hmm. And really Sunday for me is like big picture storylines. Like, what do I need to know about what happened last week with these teams if I didn't watch the game? oftentimes I'll go back and try to watch the game either Sunday or Monday. And then I just try to get my hands on as much information as I possibly can, whether that's reading articles, diving into stats, of course, talking to the players and coaches is most important. But just trying to become experts on the two teams that you're covering that weekend is really what the week is filled with. And then Thursday, I usually fly in. And then Friday mornings, we have our meetings with coaches. We're about to head over to the stadium in just a little bit to do interviews with Mike Gundy and company. And then we'll do the visiting team at later, usually in the evening. The Hogs are not staying in Stillwater. They're staying in Tulsa. So that'll be via Zoom. But usually it's in person. And then I kind of put my final notes together Saturday night. And you wake up or Friday night and then wake up Saturday morning and it's go time.
So you're in Stillwater now. What's the feeling like around town?
Yeah, I just took a yoga class this morning and it was, I love being back in college towns when they, you know, they're saying go Pokes during the warm up and workout. And that's so fun. I was in Alabama last week and I love to exercise. And so I always find local places to get a workout class in. And last week it was Roll Tide, you know, let's go Kalen DeBoer. And then this week, some go poke. So people are excited, I think, about the return of football. Certainly they had this last week. They played at home last week, but this feels different with an SEC opponent. And I think one of the things I was talking to a young girl who goes to school here, and she was saying how a lot of her high school friends went to Arkansas. So there's a lot of crossover between the two student bodies, kids that went to high school together, knew each other, played against each other in different sports, what have you. So I think it's fun because these schools don't play very often in football. They haven't played since 1980, but there is a lot of crossover. So in some ways it's already this like mini rivalry just because of the nature of how close these two schools are.
And you know this, by being here, you know, we both went to school here. You go to the U of A, you're bound to meet somebody from Tulsa. You're bound to meet somebody from Oklahoma City. And it seems like over the last 10, 15 years, that's even accelerated some. It's surprising that it's been so long since these two teams have played.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of people this week ask me, do you think this will continue? And we'll see. But I one of the things that I point out, I'm like, I want OU and OSU to play every year. The fact that now OU's in the SEC and they won't be playing every year, that's sad to me. You know, that's a great rivalry in college football. So I would love to see that continue. But certainly the proximity of how close Arkansas and Oklahoma State are, I would love to see them play more.
Anything special planned production-wise on ABC tomorrow?
You know, I just think we're going to try to tell stories because when we were talking to Talen this week, I told him in a large part, we're introducing you to the national audience. So I'm excited about diving more into his story. Really excited about telling a little bit more about the recruiting process between him and Bobby Petrino and those types of conversations, and just hopefully giving fans a behind the scenes look of what it's been like in the program and helping, you know, make these athletes human beings to fans at home. That's always what I look forward to. But I think first and foremost, I'm just looking forward to a good game. I think this one could really come down to the wire, which is always what makes it fun. And that's what the viewers, I think everybody wants that.
What's been your most memorable sideline experience? And I'm talking about college football because I do want to talk about what you do with baseball here for a minute. Was it the mayonnaise game?
I'm glad you brought that up. That actually was not on the top of my head. That was really fun. That season I was with Anish Shroff and Mike Golic Jr. And that was my first year on a full package. So when I say full package, it means you get a game every week. You're with the same crew. And so when you're with the same crew every week, you build relationships with these people because you're seeing them more than you see your family. And the three of us became really, really good friends, as well as some of the guys on our production crew. And I think we're all kind of goofy and we're willing to push the envelope a little bit. So we came up with those ideas to do that. And it was a social media hit way more than I expected, to be honest. So that was certainly memorable. And for me, it was just a culmination of a really awesome season with those guys. I would, you know, just because maybe I'm talking to you, I really do think getting to cover Arkansas has been really, really special. Again, just from the perspective of it allows me to reflect and see how far I've come on my own journey, because I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes you don't appreciate where you are until you sit back and reflect. And I'm not very good at reflecting, but covering an Arkansas game, it forces me to do that. So I think covering the Hogs has been fun. I think any game that comes down to the wire, I did the Florida State game a couple years ago, which was primetime ABC, and it was Anthony Richardson's last game at Florida. And I don't know if you remember, but that week leading up to the game, he said to the media, like, we're going to win this game, and when we win, X, Y, and Z. And so, of course, it was bulletin board material for Florida State. And so there was, like, a lot of drama already in that rivalry, but then that kind of added fuel to the fire. And being a part of that rivalry was amazing. And, of course, you know, Florida State has not had the season they would have dreamt of to begin this year. But back in 22, that was – you know, they were on the up and up. And of course, last year, 23, they went undefeated. But that one was really, really memorable just because it was a huge audience. There were a ton of people watching, and you could just feel the magnitude of that game in the stadium. It was that Doak Campbell sold out crowd. So that's probably one that's up there for me as well.
I'm glad you talked about reflection, because I did want to talk about your career a little bit. And I'm not just saying this because I have you on the show. I've told other people this. I think you're a rising star in this business. I see what you do with the Cubs broadcast. I see what you do with the football broadcast. And I can tell you that everybody who's been in the basement at Kemple Hall is real proud of you. I talked to Larry Foley yesterday, who's a mentor of mine and of yours, and I know this. And he said that when, and you can imagine Foley saying this, he said, when I tell you that Taylor McGregor started in the smallest market in America, she started in the smallest market in America. Casper, Wyoming. Tell me about going from Casper, Wyoming to getting to where you are now.
Yeah, I think it was what I needed to do. I needed to get reps. Look, God love Larry Foley, and they probably were like, how did this girl end up where she is? Because I was not the most gifted in my class by any means. And I mean, there were people who I felt like were way better, more talented than me. And so I recognized pretty early in college, like, I got to work really hard at this to be able to grow and get better. And speaking of hard work, anybody who's worked in a small market knows it's just that. It is hard work. And so I went to Wyoming, and what it did for me is it gave me everyday reps, and it allowed me to hone my craft, as they say. And really for me, it was like getting good at writing. Of course, the element of being live on television and calming those nerves, building relationships with coaches and players. That's such an underrated part of what we do that I don't think gets talked about enough, how challenging it is and how important it is to be able to build those. And so kind of just gave me a space to mess up and, you know, hone my craft in the process. And so I'm so thankful for my couple of years spent there. When I graduated, I didn't want to go there, but looking back, I mean, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I have lifelong friends. I really, really enjoyed my time there. And when I left, I was sad. I mean, I knew it was the next, it was right for me professionally that I needed to take the next step and move on. But I really, really enjoyed my time there. And I'm so thankful for the ways it grew me both personally and professionally.
Did you cover any rodeo?
I did. So the college national finals rodeo is in Casper. So, I mean, wake up and welcome to the rodeo world. I had no idea what any of it entailed, and I had to learn quick, but that was really fun learning about rodeo. I mean, there were throughout the summer there, that was really what we covered. Cause it's a huge deal there. So I learned a ton. I got to do some really cool features on it as well. I never got on a bull, but I got pretty close. And just, you know, doing fun things. And then in the winter, dog sled racing was big. I went out to Jackson Hole and covered, you know, a big race out there. So certainly covered sports I barely knew even existed, or knew nothing about. But it was challenging, but also what was best for me. And like I said, I'm very thankful for my time in Wyoming.
In addition to her work on ABC, Taylor does some studio work with MLB Network, also a field reporter for Markey and their broadcast of Cubs games. I want to ask you about being at the Cubs no-hitter earlier this week, a combined no-hitter. Shota Imanaga started that. I think he went seven innings. Had you ever been at a no-hitter before?
So I've never been at a no-hitter, but in 2020, we were broadcasting games remotely. So I was on the call for one, but it happened in Milwaukee and we weren't there. So Alec Mills threw one with the Cubs, but they were in Milwaukee. We were in Chicago because it was COVID in 2020. So yes and no, that was my first one being present, which was super cool. And I think my favorite part about all of that was, if you're familiar at all with Imanaga, I mean, he's just been an amazing story for the Cubs this year, coming over from Japan and having instant success. And he's a character too. He's really embraced Chicago culture. He's embraced American culture. And he came out after seven, didn't even know he had a no-hitter going. And then he told his story post-game. He said, Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, comes up to him looking worried. And he was like, oh no, like, what did I do wrong? And then Craig told him, you know, we're going to take you out, and told him that he had a no-hitter going. And so it's kind of funny how that all worked out. But that was really cool. And I think one of the special parts for me covering baseball is you just never know what could happen every day you show up to the ballpark. So Wednesday was one of those special days.
I was on a mission trip to Boston in 2008, and it was supposed to be a Tuesday to Tuesday trip. And somehow it got changed to Monday, but we were supposed to go to a Red Sox game at Fenway on Monday night. And so we didn't end up going. It was the night that John Lester threw a no-hitter. So that was going to be my first Fenway experience, and I missed it. Pretty cool, though, to be there, I would think, although I haven't experienced one in person. Hey, let's get you out.
No, it was really cool, yeah.
Let's get you out of here on this. What major league teams do you think are worth watching down the stretch? Who do you think's in the best position as we got about a month to go before the playoffs?
I've always said the Phillies from day one. That's been my pick. They've not been as good as of late. I still think they're built for October, and they've proven that the last several years. They went and got Carlos Estevez at the deadline from Anaheim, and you know, hopefully he can continue to lock things down at the back end of the bullpen. So I'm going to stick with the Phillies. Again, they haven't been as good as of late. I'm interested to see what happens with the Milwaukee Brewers. And it's an odd pick because coming into the season, people didn't even pick them to finish in the top three of the National League Central. And here they are with the biggest division lead in baseball. And it's amazing the way that they've won games this year. I mean, the amount of starting pitchers they've used, and they have, I think, the third best team ERA in baseball this season after, by the way, they traded away Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff is on the injured list. So their two horses from a year ago are not pitching with the team this year, and they've been able to pitch. They've been able to score runs, which has been the problem with Milwaukee the last several years, is they just have not been able to score runs, and they've been able to do that consistently. Like, I think people look at their roster and say, no way. But I'm like, they've proven all season long they can do it. And at some point over the course of 162, we have to believe them. So I don't think they're the most talented roster, but they've certainly showed really impressive things all year long. And so, like, that's kind of my sleeper pick if you want a team to watch in the National League. In the American League, I'm in Stillwater right now, the home of the Holidays, which – if you're not familiar with the Holiday family, Matt Holiday played in the major leagues for a long time. Josh Holiday is the head baseball coach at Oklahoma State. Matt's son, Jackson, plays for the Orioles. So I've seen a lot of Orioles gear around town here, and I think they're an interesting team. They've dealt with some injuries. That's been tough. But I would say them and the Yankees, for me, are the teams to watch in the American League.
James McCann and Heston Kerstad, a couple of former Razorbacks on that Orioles team, too.
Yes, I actually – so we played the Orioles this year, and Drew Smyly plays for the Cubs, who former Razorback as well. And so I went up to McCann and asked him some stories about Smyly because they threw a no-hitter together. James is catching Drew. So had some fun reminiscing about that, and then introduced myself to Heston. And, you know, I didn't call the Hogs, but I was close to calling the Hogs. So it's always fun to make those connections.
It used to be a lot of fun. I'd go over to Baum in the offseason. You'd have, you know, James McCann and Drew Smyly, you know, they're throwing to each other. Brandon Nimmo, who lived in town at that time, he was in there swinging a bat. He had a lot of big leaguers there at the ballpark. Yeah. Always kind of fun to hang around there in Fayetteville. Taylor, it was great talking to you, and hopefully we'll see you over in Stillwater, and good luck on your call tomorrow.
Yes, thank you so much. And give Professor Foley a hug for me. You're probably going to see him before me. But
I don't think he'll like my hugs.
You don't think what?
I don't think he's going to want a hug from me. I'll shake his hand. How about that?
Okay, perfect. Shake his hand for me. Thanks so much for having me on. It was awesome chatting with you.
All right, appreciate it, Taylor. We'll see you tomorrow.
Perfect. All right,
Taylor McGregor, who's going to be on the call of ABC tomorrow. When we come back, Ben Portnoy from the Sports Business Journal will join us to talk about this House versus NCAA settlement and the developments yesterday in federal court in California. We'll be back after this.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. If you have watched our show at all, you know that we have got a great deal of interest in this House versus NCAA case, potential settlement, and the word potential there is really important because it hasn't been approved yet. And if the if what happened yesterday in a hearing between the sides in the Northern District of California in Oakland is any indication, this deal may be on the verge of falling apart. And I want to bring in Ben Portnoy from the Sports Business Journal to talk about this because, Ben, this is huge. I have said many times that I think that if this settlement is approved by the judge in the case, Claudia Wilken, that it's right there with Oklahoma versus NCAA, you know, in the Supreme Court case in 84 that deregulated television rights. It's right there with Title IX. This is one of the really big pieces of legislation or a judicial decision that's going to impact college sports for a long time. Tell us what happened Thursday and where you think we stand in this settlement.
Yeah, so I think to your point, right, like this is a huge, huge deal, and I get it. You know, legal stuff is not the most fun. It's not the most exciting. It's not like Saturday in the fall, right? But I do think there's a huge, huge thing to be discussed here, and that's that basically the two sides got together on Thursday and said, you know, hey, we're going to get together. We're going to talk to the judge. We're going to see some of the things that she sees in this settlement that she either agrees with, doesn't agree with, and can point us in the right direction to kind of get our wording right. Now, that happened for about the first hour and a half of the hearing, of this 3-hour hearing. And then we got to the point where, you know, one of the stipulations in this settlement and this discussion is around how the NCAA can limit basically the involvement of boosters and NIL collectives. And the short version is the NCAA has basically said, hey, any deal over $600, this is sort of this arbitrary number that has been picked, will be vetted by a third party clearinghouse. And that those deals will need to be vetted to make sure that they are quote unquote true NIL and not just basically pay for play. Now, Judge Wilken basically said, okay, if that's the case, part of this settlement is that you're going to share revenues from each university with student athletes. Why is that not pay for play, but a booster paying you is pay for play? And I think this delineation is part of the gymnastics that the NCAA has played for a long time and has tried to draw this line. And, as the NCAA's lawyer kind of tried to explain this and walk through this, there were definitely a lot of shoulder shrugs and eye rolls from Judge Wilken. So that's kind of what happened, and that's the big piece that came out last night.
It seems like any time a mirror is held up to the NCAA's rules and regulations, they have a really hard time defending their position on this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that this is this has been the argument around college sports forever, right? Is that if you take it, it's twofold, right? You take the idea of saying, hey, we're going to have this entity And I think this comes into the case of revenue sharing and a lot of discussion around this settlement of like how money is going to be divvied up. So like, let's say the University of Arkansas decides they're going to pay $20 million to their athletes, right? And they say, hey, $15 million is going to go toward the football team and $5 million will go toward everyone else. Well, like the market would tell you, those are the programs that are making money. That's where they're going to send their revenues, right? You know, obviously Title IX is a factor in that and all of that, but it's, again, it's sort of taking this context, taking this out of a college sports context and putting it in a business context. It's kind of the same thing of like, you're going to run a business where all these people are going to do work for you, quote unquote, which in this case is athletes playing and competing. But you're not going to pay them. And the only people that are going to make money are the higher ups. And it just doesn't make any sense. And I think that, like, obviously this idea of amateurism is super ingrained in college athletics and has been for 100 and however many years. But I think that, you know, when you take what it is at face value and put it in the context of literally any other business in America, it doesn't make any sense and it doesn't hold up. And I think that's basically what Judge Wilkins said last night.
There is a group of female athletes who also was heard from, or at least their attorneys were heard from during this ruling. Basically, the judge told them, and their complaint is that, hey, if football is going to get a high percentage of the revenue share and men's basketball is going to get a high percentage, does that not constitute a Title IX violation? And basically, what the judge told them was that this is an antitrust case, and therefore the sexual discrimination complaints that they have don't really apply to antitrust.
Exactly. And so, you know, I had a long conversation with Jeffrey Kessler, the plaintiff's attorney, about this exact thing. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but the super short version is, listen, like, we are not in this settlement telling schools how they're going to divvy up their money. Like, in so many words, do whatever the hell you want. Like, you guys pay whoever you want to pay, and that's fine. But what we're telling you is, here's how much you can give, you guys divvy that up however you desire. And so that basically, to that point, is, you know, if you create a Title IX issue for yourself, that's the schools doing it to themselves, not this settlement stipulating, hey, 75% of the revenue that you share has to go to the football team or the men's basketball team or whatever that might be. So I think that, you know, that definitely got brought up last night. And I think the attorneys made it pretty clear, like, that is not part of the settlement. Now, that said, you know, with this settlement, as with everything, it's sort of like you pull at one string and six more strings fall out. And I think that, you know, this Title IX piece is really interesting and really, I think, is a big thing that a lot of athletic departments are watching and keeping tabs on, because I think, to my example earlier, right, like, a lot of people privately and administrators I've spoken with say, you know, hey, if my football team's driving 75% of my revenue, why then of the revenue that we're sharing with athletes, would they not qualify for 75% of that? Now, on paper, that obviously creates a Title IX issue. But I think that realistically, like, what's probably going to happen here is you're going to have some schools that go out, pay it based on sort of the market value, or, you know, what sort of percentage the football team or the men's basketball team is making off of that athletic department's budget. And then someone's probably going to get sued, and we're going to be in this discussion again. But I think that that's kind of where we're at right now on that front.
I'm talking with Ben Portnoy from the Sports Business Journal. I think, Ben, be it this hearing yesterday or just some conversations that frankly I've had this week, NIL is not going away. And I think that maybe the NCAA had hoped that they could rein in the collectives through this settlement. If anything, NIL may become bigger as, you know, a supplemental type income to players who are getting money through revenue share, or maybe it goes to some players who aren't getting as much through the revenue share as we've discussed here. NIL seems, and you kind of alluded to this, it seems like it's the main sticking point right now in what's going on between the sides and the judge. And what I find very interesting is that the NCAA is coming into Claudia Wilkins' courtroom where the O'Bannon case was initially heard. And, you know, she made the ruling that really kind of helped pave the way for NIL. It just seems kind of ironic, I guess, that they're trying to rein in NIL in the same court where it was kind of born.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that, again, to your point, like, NIL is a big sticking point here. And I think that, you know, the reality is, okay, so for, you know, obviously we're in the weeds on this, but the short version is, right, if a school can share and the settlement stipulates, hey, you can share up to, we'll use a round number, $20 million in revenue mm-hmm. every year. Most college football teams in the highest echelons of college football are operating on budgets between 10, 15, 15 to 20, you know, call it $18 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I say that to say that if the only money that is going to go to your football program through rev share is whatever, $10 million, $12 million, guys are going to be taking pay cuts. So the point is that NIL and as it exists and collectives and all of these sort of buzzwords that we throw out around this, like, those are still going to have to exist in some capacity because, listen, football players aren't going to be thrilled if their checks aren't clearing in the yeah. same way or they're not getting the same payment that they were. So I say that to say of, like, you know, there's going to be revenue share, and that might take, you know, that basically says, hey, okay, if I'm paying my football team, you know, across the board $15 million, that $10 million of that is taken care of by the university, by the athletic department through rev share, or even $12 million or 15, whatever the number becomes, there's still going to be guys that are going to want money on top of that. And I think that that is where schools in the Power Four, particularly the Big Ten and the SEC, and schools with bigger budgets that sort of play in those worlds are going to need collectives. And I think it was last night that, you know, one of the attorneys, I believe it was Jeffrey Kessler, who's one of the plaintiff's attorneys, basically said, like, this is not going to stop NIL. And that, you know, I think that the idea from the NCAA is that this would curb some of that activity. But the reality is like, what the market pressures are and what the market value is for running for a football team right now, like, NIL is going to exist because people are going to want to pay above that cap. And I think mm-hmm. that's where you still see collectives and NIL deals and things like that still factor in.
Bottom line, do you think the settlement falls apart?
I think it depends what the NCAA wants to do, right? Like, I think that basically last night, a line in the sand was drawn, right? And the NCAA has said, and Judge Wilkin has basically said, hey, this wording that you've put around boosters and their involvement and third party NIL, which is basically NIL collectives, isn't kosher. Like, I don't like the language here. I think you need to figure it out. And she said, you know, quote unquote, like, I need you guys to go back to the drawing board and figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I think that the NCAA's lawyer kind of said the quiet part out loud where, you know, he said, you know, look, like, this is a fundamental piece of the settlement. And if that's not part of it, like, I'm not sure we have a settlement. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's a lawyer doing their job and representing the parties that they represent. But I think that's a really, really, really major point to discuss. And that, you know, the NCAA's the point is, like, this is basically in the NCAA's court. Like, they're either going to go with this or they're not. And if they don't, the settlement could fall apart. And if it doesn't, then there's going to have to be some kind of middle ground reached. But I mean, the plaintiff's attorneys basically said last night, like, hey, listen, like, we're good with this. We can take this out. We'll go to trial otherwise, if that's the case. But obviously the NCAA, you know, again, like, the ball's kind of in their court. They have to decide whether they want to right around this piece of it or eliminate this clearinghouse idea or we'll see. And maybe there's a court date in play here in the next couple of months.
And just to follow up on something you said, just to make sure everyone knows, this is a settlement for three different antitrust cases that were in litigation against the NCAA. Those have basically put on hold while they try to get this settlement approved. If the settlement falls apart, then the NCAA goes back to court to, you know, hear all of these different cases. Let's get you out of here on this. They meet again in 3 weeks. Confidence is not very high, I think, that, you know, everything's going to be fine and dandy when they get back together. But let's just say it is. Based on what I've read, at that point, it would still take 150 more days, so 5 months, for the judge to reach a final approval on this. That's March. We've got administrators and coaches, and, you know, here they're waiting to see what happens. Because the application of this would be next summer, July, August, whenever these new rules would kick in. How frantic do you think things are behind the scenes as ADs and coaches and, you know, conference commissioners and everybody who's affected by this as they try to prepare for one thing, but in reality, next year may look totally different?
Yeah, well, I would say this. Like, I think most administrators that I talk to have done some level of preparation for this, right? Like, they have an idea, but the problem is that they're kind of running off of mock budgets and mock ideas. Is, you know, you can kind of only project these things out so much until you know what's in the fine print. And I think that that's the hard part, right? Now, there's going to have to be an adjustment regardless of what happens, right? If the settlement goes through, there's probably going to be some changes as far as some of the minute details and how things get paid out and things like that. And that's going to have to happen on the fly. But, you know, I think people see this and say, hey, okay, a year out, like that seems like not that long of a time. But you're basically talking about taking an entity, college sports, and changing the entire way the business is operated. I mean, like, it's hard to overstate how different a system this is mm-hmm. relative to what it was. And I think that the infrastructure is not in place just about anywhere. You know, you're probably going to have to rearrange how your staff is organized. You're going to have to rearrange who's on your staff. There's a lot of moving pieces here. And I think that that means that, you know, this is going to be a really quick turnaround if a settlement's reached. And if it's not, then this is probably going to carry out into 2025. And then you're looking really more likely at 2026 and things kicking in and appeals and everything else. So, you know, if there's not a settlement, we're looking at another, what, year and a half, 2 years of this maybe. Mm-hmm. If a settlement is reached, it's going to be fast and furious and quick for people to try and figure this out.
Of course, every different organization works on different fiscal years. You know, some go on a calendar, some start in the summer. I have to believe that there are going to be a lot of schools that have two different, you know, budgets that they're preparing, basically a contingency based on if this is passed or if this is not passed. It's amazing. We got a full weekend of college football games, and some of the biggest stories that we're talking about right now are federal court cases and DirecTV against Disney. Ben, we appreciate you being on. Ben Portnoy from the Sports Business Journal.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate y'all having me.
All right. Appreciate you. And when we come back, we're going to have Ethan Westerman on the desk. We'll talk more about Arkansas and Oklahoma State this weekend. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
And welcome back. Final segment before the weekend. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or you can find them online at bentonvilleglass.com. All right, we've got Ethan Westerman with us on the desk now, and Ethan, slide that paper over here for a minute. We're going to talk about Arkansas and Oklahoma State this weekend. It doesn't really feel real that this game is tomorrow. You know, you talk about it, you talk about it, you talk about it, and then boom, there it is. And part of it, I guess, is kind of how we do this podcast. We used to do our football preview podcast 2 or 3 days in advance, and
yeah,
you know, now here we are doing it the day before. But hey, that's how the real world works. You wrote at WholeHogSports.com this week. Your keys to the game. I just kind of want to go through those here for just a minute. It feels to me like the number one key to this game is the run game. And it's not just the Oklahoma State run game with Ollie Gordon, although that is a huge component to this. It's how well does Taylen Green get out and make plays with his legs? How well can they block for Jaquindon Jackson? Is Rashad DeBinion available? And if he's not, how did the running backs like, you know, Reed and Russell and the others behind them, you know, how do they play in this game? So I think there's a lot of, you know, layers to this. And then obviously we've talked about Arkansas's defensive line being a strength for the Razorbacks, Oklahoma State's offensive line being a strength. On the other side, you know, how does Arkansas's offensive line go up against Oklahoma State's defensive front? Another, you know, key to this game. But the run game, it just feels like it goes back to, I've heard coaches say this many times before, winning is about running the ball and stopping the run. Can you run it? Can you stop it? And who does that best overall, offensively and defensively this week is probably going to be the team that wins the game.
Yeah, I mean, as Ollie Gordon goes, so too goes Oklahoma State, in my opinion. I mean, their quarterback, Alan Bowman, he's not going to just wow you with his arm. He gets his plays in the air kind of predicated on how well they're running the ball with Ollie Gordon. I think it's one of those games that you can look at the rushing stats at the end of the game and probably know what team won. I just think that it's going to be – I know Sam Pittman said slobber knocker earlier this week. It's going to be the type of game, I think, that it's going to be won in the trenches. I think that it all starts, though, with Ollie Gordon. If he has a big game, I don't see Arkansas having a great shot in this one.
I think we've got this queued up. We had Taylor McCarg on the show yesterday, and he had some thoughts on Taylen Green. It was kind of interesting to hear from him because he had covered Taylen when he was at Boise State.
Yeah.
Well, first thing, I got to see Taylen Green a couple times the last few years because a lot of my work is with CBS, and we've done a lot of Mountain West, and that's a really exciting player. And I think the former staff at Boise State, I thought they were doing him a disservice, and I'm excited for him just as a player to have this opportunity because I think Arkansas will get more out of him than the former regime at Boise State did. They were not using him appropriately, in my opinion, towards the end of his time there.
So that was Taylor McCarg, who called Oklahoma State's game against South Dakota State last week on ESPN Plus, talking about Taylen Green. The QB play in this game is very interesting because you have two quarterbacks who, you know, last year was pretty similar for them. I mean, you know, they had okay years, but they also struggled with interceptions. Which quarterback's going to limit the mistakes? Which quarterback's going to make the big plays? That feels like a huge key.
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to say, I heard that yesterday, and I was going to mention, I think that he's right. I think Taylen Green is in the system right now that he's probably feeling a lot more confident in himself with. I think this is the first big test, though, of can he kind of overcome some of those issues that plagued him at Boise State, where it's honestly, like you said, it's a similar situation. Which quarterback is going to avoid just the trying to make something out of nothing and making a big mistake and turning the ball over? I think that Oklahoma State felt actually really good about Alan Bowman in the first game this year, his ability to kind of get in those scramble situations and just kind of check down in the flat. They said that it kind of stood out his decision-making against South Dakota State. I think same thing can be said for Taylen Green. He's got to be good at that this game.
Pat Jones said that he thinks it comes down to Oklahoma State's speed against Arkansas's brute force. Mike Gundy said he wasn't happy with how the Cowboys played last week. He also noted that he's got high expectations for the team. So even though they won 44-20, you know, that kind of goes into it. He said, you know, the coaches are going to nitpick, right? I mean, you win, they're still going to find something to complain about. Sam Pittman came off the sidelines going into halftime last week against UAPB. They're winning 49-0, and he's complaining about the penalties. So that's just how a coach's mind works. It feels to me like which defense can limit the big plays is going to be the key to this. Arkansas did against a totally overmatched team from Pine Bluff. Oklahoma State didn't really do that against South Dakota State. The Jackrabbits had some big plays, some big chunk plays in that game.
Yeah, I think if you're Arkansas, you feel like an area you can exploit is the Oklahoma State secondary doesn't just look like that great, in my opinion. Arkansas, on the flip side, you know, the UAPB game, the quarterback stepped out of bounds. If not, Arkansas would have given up a big play at a UAPB that deep. Almost touchdown. It's one of those games that's like secondary play, I think, is also going to be like just something like the game within the game, as far as like if Arkansas is having some success, you know, in the run game and can get the pass going as well. I don't think Oklahoma State has the secondary really to compete, like, or to at least limit Arkansas. I think Arkansas could have a big game is what I'm trying to say if the Oklahoma State secondary you know, if they're having to be concerned with the run early and stopping the run, that's whenever, you know, you open things up for your Isaiah Satania, your Tyrone Broden. We don't know if Andrew Armstrong will play, but he could be big if he's in this one.
Let's get predictions now. We've got not a lot of big games this weekend. There's only a couple of top 25 versus top 25 teams. Arkansas-Oklahoma State, it's one of the bigger games of the weekend, just given the fact that Oklahoma State's ranked and Arkansas is from a power conference. We'll get to that one last. Let's start off with a Friday night game, Ethan. BYU goes to SMU in Dallas. This is a Power 4 game now, by the way. BYU-SMU. This used to be, I mean, it's kind of crazy, you know, just to see how alignment has changed everything. SMU, coached by Rhett Lashley, the former Razorback, an 11.5-point favorite at home.
Yeah, I know. And I know the line's 11.5, but I'm going to pick BYU. I think I like BYU early in the season. They've been in the Big 12 for a year now, and I think that they last year coming to Arkansas, they impressed me just with like their physicality. I felt like early in the year, I think that this might be the type of game that SMU didn't impress me in their opener against Nevada.
SMU looks like they're going to have problems on the line in the ACC, and BYU, we've seen them. They got those big old boys up front.
It just screams to me a BYU win. I don't know why.
It does. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and go with SMU, though, at home. I think maybe they got some they got scared a couple of weeks ago at Nevada. Maybe that helps them figure some things out. I'm going to take them at home. Wouldn't be surprised to see if BYU wins that game.
That line is way too high, though, in my opinion.
Cal goes to Auburn. The Tigers are a 13-point favorite.
Auburn, I like them. I think Hugh Freeze, love him or hate him as a person. He's a great coach, and I don't think that they're going to lay an egg in this one.
Auburn won a close one last year in Berkeley. I'll take Auburn, too, just being at home. CBS. Do we have the CBS theme queued up? I know you love hearing the CBS theme over Big Ten games. Iowa State goes to number 21, Iowa. They play for the Cy Hawk Trophy.
I like Ohio State. I just think that they're very, very talented.
Okay.
I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, how about I'm going to go with Iowa at home in Kinnick Stadium with the CBS theme playing.
I mean, more power to you with that pick, but I'm not going to go on that limb.
Ethan, he said Iowa State, not Ohio State.
Oh.
Oh.
Can we cut that out?
No, we're rolling.
I heard Ohio State. You caught me off guard because I was literally thinking, I was like, I feel like I would have heard this matchup a lot more this week.
This goes back to when we don't listen to each other. Yeah, well, I didn't hear you say Ohio State. I guess Ohio State and Iowa State, they kind of sound the same.
I'm picking Iowa with these two teams.
My grandpa always said Ohio.
Yeah. So. I literally started looking at my, I don't know if you can see it. I started looking at my computer like, what the heck?
No.
Iowa. I'll pick Iowa.
Okay, so you think Iowa beats Iowa State?
Yes.
You thought Iowa played Ohio State for the Cy Hawk Trophy?
I was wondering what was happening here. I heard you say Ohio State, and I was thrown off.
Kansas goes to Illinois. Another Big Ten home game. Brett Bielema hosting the Jayhawks this week. Kansas ranked number 19, a 4.5-point favorite.
Give me Kansas. I like Lance Leipold.
I think Illinois, they had a decent game last week, right? A pretty good opener? I think they did. Kansas has got the quarterback. If Jaden Daniels is good, he's good. You know what I mean? I'll take Kansas on the road, too, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Bielema and his guys pull off an upset. First SEC game of the year, South Carolina goes to Kentucky. The Wildcats are an 8.5-point favorite at home.
Kentucky by a lot.
I watched South Carolina play last week. Was not impressed with them at all. Mm-hmm. I watched Kentucky play a little bit of their game against Southern Miss, too, before it was rained out in the third quarter. You know, Kentucky, I feel like the thing about Kentucky that always gets overlooked is that they've got real good line play under Mark Stoops. And I didn't think South Carolina looked real good up front. I'll take Kentucky as well. I mentioned a couple of top 25 matchups. The big one is Saturday morning, the big noon kickoff game on Fox. Number 3, Texas, goes to number 10, Michigan, trying to end the Wolverines' long win streak after they won the national championship last year. The Longhorns are a 7-point favorite in the Big House.
Yeah, and I think they'll win by more. This isn't the same Michigan team from last year. Texas returns a lot of guys. They're really talented. Got a lot of good transfers. I think Texas wins big.
I don't know that Texas is as good as it was last season. I also, I'm weary of the fact that Texas has had some injuries in the running back room. But if I'm just basing this on what I saw last week, I didn't think Michigan was real impressive beating Fresno State. I think Texas goes there and probably wins because, I wasn't real impressed with Michigan last week, but I don't know that Texas is the third best team in the country either. You know, obviously they'll shake out here over the next few weeks. Another top 25 matchup, a neutral site matchup in Charlotte on the Panthers' home field, 14th ranked Tennessee and 24th ranked North Carolina State. The Vols are a 10-point favorite. This is in North Carolina, but I have a feeling in Charlotte it'll be maybe more of a Tennessee home game.
Yeah, I like Tennessee to win this one. North Carolina State didn't really impress me last week against Western Carolina. I felt like they kind of got beat at the line a lot, which if you're doing that against an FCS team, I think that an SEC team could really exploit that.
Yeah, so I'll take Tennessee, too. 10-point? Yeah, I think they could probably cover that. Wouldn't be surprised by that at all.
Yep.
That's the Mayo. Was it the Mayo? The Duke's Mayo Bowl. Classic, by the way.
Yeah.
You think Josh Heupel will get doused in Mayo if he wins this game? Because, you know, they do it for the bowl game, But I don't know if they do it for the early season game.
Who played in this one last year? I'm trying to remember.
I think this was the South Carolina UNC game at the beginning of the year. It was the night of the Arkansas West Carolina game.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know if they do Mayo for just a regular season game, but I think Josh Heupel would be a good ambassador.
They only save Mayo for the big ones.
I think he'd be a great candidate.
And then finally, our game that we've been talking about all week. Arkansas goes to Oklahoma State. The Cowboys are a 7.5-point favorite. This will be an 11 a.m. kickoff on ABC. Hopefully you get to see it if you have DirecTV. We think you will if you have a satellite. Don't know if you will if you have a DirecTV stream. Or maybe these guys could come together and get something settled before then. Wouldn't that be a novel concept? Cowboys are a 7.5-point favorite. Ethan, who you got?
The more I've looked at this game, the more I've felt like Arkansas has just across the board, Arkansas is just as talented, in my opinion. If you go back and look at their recruiting rankings and everything, I think Arkansas can stack up with them at just across the board, pretty much every position. Except they have the Doak Walker Award winning running back. The offensive line, it's experienced, but they didn't impress me against South Dakota State that much. All that to say, I think Arkansas has a legitimate chance to win, but I can't just pick them. They got to prove that they can win to me. I'm going to pick Oklahoma State at home.
You're trying to let us down easily.
I don't want to come off as hating Arkansas's team right now. It's just you got to prove it.
I'm going with Arkansas. I think the Razorbacks go over there and win. I think Arkansas has got the athletes to hang with Oklahoma State. I think it's going to come down to line play. Is Arkansas as physical as they hope they are this year? They've got to be physical in this game. If they can't beat Oklahoma State on the offensive line and the defensive line, then they're going to have trouble beating the SEC teams that they're going to see down the road. I think that they've got to go over there. They've got to prove their physicality. Like I said, I think they've got the athletes to play with them. I like this Talen Green, Bobby Petrino combination. And I'll tell you one other thing. I don't think Arkansas had to show nearly as many cards in week one as Oklahoma State did, because Arkansas knew they could go out there and play a little bit with their hands tied behind their back, going with more vanilla type plays, mm-hmm. and play UAPB, whereas I think Oklahoma State had to put a little bit more into beating South Dakota State. I think that's a key. I think it's a key that Arkansas got a couple of extra days of preparation. And Oklahoma State, they have been known, even though they're a good program, they've been known to lay an egg or two every year, including on their home field. They've mm-hmm. laid some eggs on their home field. I got Arkansas. I think Arkansas goes and beats them.
And I think last year they got blasted at UCF. I almost said UFC. UCF.
They got blasted at home by South Alabama in this week.
It's just, they're very unpredictable. They're a weird team, in my opinion. Yeah. They have been, and that UCF team had a dual threat quarterback like Talen Green.
Gundy's teams remind me of Houston Nutt's teams. Typically competitive, but every now and then there's a game that just makes you go, what on earth did I just watch?
Yeah.
And, I think if you look at their winning percentages, very similar Gundy at Oklahoma State to what we saw with Houston Nutt here at Arkansas. Hope you go to WholeHogSports.com this weekend. You'll see all of our coverage from Stillwater. We'll be there. And we'll be back Monday with another podcast to recap what we saw between the Razorbacks and the Cowboys. We'll see you next week. Hope you have a great weekend, everyone.